seeing the photo of His Holiness Kadamba Kanana Swami there on Prabhupada's Vyasa San is so heartbreaking, actually. At the same time, back home, back to Godhead, right? So, giving wonderful example, his entire life and his departure. But I don't know how you feel, but I feel that the world will never be the same without him. And yes. But life goes on. We have to continue. So, let us continue with Bhagavad Gita. Krishna's eternal words. I was told verse number 10 of chapter 16. Yes, okay. There's a sign here. Dragi predabateli prosim ponovi vprashanya obchinstva zanasho internetno poslushostvo ki te vprashanya ne slishi. Hala. Okay. Good. So we read from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, and we're reading from chapter 16, which is getting toward the end of Bhagavad Gita. And this chapter is called The Divine and Demoniac Natures. Mainly it's about demoniac natures, with some short reference to divine nature in the beginning. Or we could say, well, the description of the demonic nature is also indirectly describing divine nature, because divine nature is the counterpart, the opposite. So in any case, verse 10, we're reading, it's a continuation of discussion of the demonic nature. So we can read this together. Kamam, lust, ashitya, taking shelter of, dushpuram, insatiable, dumba, of pride, mana, and false prestige, mada anvita, absorbed in the conceit. Mohat, by illusion. Grihitva, taking. Asat, non-permanent. Grahan, things. Pravartante, they flourish. Ashuchi, to the unclean. Vrata, avowed. translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation: taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige. The demoniac, thus illusioned, are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. And Prabhupada explains, the demoniac mentality is described here. The demons have no satiation for their lust. They will go on increasing and increasing their insatiable desires for material enjoyment. Although they are always full of anxieties on account of accepting non-permanent things, they still continue to engage in such activities out of illusion. They have no knowledge and cannot tell that they are heading the wrong way. Accepting non-permanent things, such demoniac people create their own god, create their own hymns, and chant accordingly. The result is that they become more and more attracted to two things: sex enjoyment and accumulation of material wealth. The word ashuchi vrataha, unclean vows, is very significant in this connection. Such demoniac people are only attracted by wine, women, gambling, and meat eating. Those are their asuchi, unclean habits. Induced by pride and false prestige, they create some principles of religion which are not approved by the Vedic injunctions. Although such demoniac people are most abominable in the world, by artificial means the world creates a false honor for them. Although they are gliding toward hell, they consider themselves very much advanced. And so ends Prabhupada's purport. Kamam ashritya duspuram dambamana madanvitaha mohat grihitva satgrahan pravartante asuchi vrataha. Taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige, the demoniac, thus illusioned, are always sworn to unclean work, attracted to the impermanent. Krishna is painting a picture in these verses, an elaboration, actually, of his brief description, which is verse number 4. Right? I think number 4 is the beginning of it. Ooh, that's a long. Yeah, number 4. Dambo darpo abhimanas cha krodha parusham eva cha agnanam cha vijatasya parta sampadam asurim. Pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance. These qualities belong to those of demonic nature. And then in the next verse he says, Daivi sampad vimokshaya nibandai asri mata. Ma shucha, don't worry. He's reassuring Arjuna. Don't worry, you're not a demon. Ma shucha sampadang daivim abhijato asi. You are abhijata, you are born with daivim sampada. You have good qualities, good assets, actually, yes. The word sampadam. You know this word, asset? An asset? Valued property. Yeah. An asset is something you own, which is, which you could trade, for example. So if you go to a bank to ask for a loan, they will ask you, what assets do you have? Which can be, mortgaged. So anyway, asset, sampada. So he's saying, Arjuna, no worries. You have all the right kind of assets. You don't have the demonic assets, which are also called assets. You have daivi sampat. But then he goes, then he says, there's these two different sorts. This is interesting, and it's something one naturally wonders. I wonder about, because next Krishna is saying that there's, it's almost like he's saying there's two species. There's two kinds of beings. There's the divine and there's the demoniac. Dvau bhuta sarga lokesmin daiva asura eva cha daiva daivo vistarasha prokta asuram parta me shinu. Dvau bhuta sarga, there's these two created living beings. Loke asmin, in this world, daiva asura. There's the daiva and asura. And then he says, daiva vistarashaha proktaha. This, what I've already explained, the daiva nature. He says vistarashaha, which is extensively. Although in this chapter he's just given a list, but he may mean by this, I've been describing all the way from the end of chapter 2, I've been describing the daivika nature. And now he says, asaram, srinu. Asaram parta me shrina. Listen to me as I describe the asura nature. So then he starts with verse number 7, and now is going to be several verses when he's describing the asuric nature. And Krishna becomes quite, we might want to say, polemical. You know the word polemical? Polemisch. That sounds German. Polemisch. He gets, he's like, he wants to make a point here. Speaking strongly, but not exactly, in some sense analytically, but not in this. It's a kind of different tone Krishna seems to have here. And he really, you can almost hear Krishna at the end of this chapter really shaking his fist. These rascals, saying, I throw them again and again into hellish condition because they don't get it, they don't listen. But he also gets he gets a little bit humorous at the same time in three verses. Let's see. Where is this? Idam madhya maya labdam idam manye manoch. Here we are. Idam madhya maya labdam idam manye mano ratam. That's it. Idam asti idam apime bhavishyati punardhanam. He's imitating the demons here. He's playing the part of a demon. And he says, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now. How was it in the, was it in Lord of the Rings? My precious. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. Aso maya hata shatrur hanishye, I will kill. Cha aparanapi, and then famously, Ishvaro hum humbogi siddho hum balavan suki. I am the Lord. Now here it's kind of double irony, because here is Krishna speaking, and he actually is Ishvara. So he's saying, Ishvaroham, I am the Lord. It's true. But he's speaking as the demon, the demonic person who is thinking, I am the Lord. Ishvaroham aham bogi, I am the Ishvara. Yes. Krishna says, Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam. Right? He is the Bhoktri, the enjoyer, Bhogi. Siddho, hum, I am perfect. Balavan, I am powerful. Suki, and I'm so happy. Anyway, we're getting ahead of where we are. Krishna summarizes the philosophy of the demonic philosophy when he says in verse 8, Asatyam apratishtam te jagadahur anishvaram. Aparas anishvaram. Ishvaroham, I am the Lord. But anishvaram, this world has no Lord. Huh? Which is it? It's confused philosophy. Aparaspara sambhutam kim anyat kama haitukam. The haituka, the hetu, the cause of everything is what? The demon says, kama, it is lust. Kama can mean more broadly just desire, but Prabhupada usually translates it as lust. So asatyam, this world is unreal, and it's without foundation of pratishta. There's no controller. And aparaspara sambhutam, it just arises. This is perhaps giving us a stab at the Buddhist idea of dependent origination. They have this idea that one thing causes another, which 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 causes another, and it goes around in a circle. There's no original cause. It's simply a one cause leads to another, which leads back, and it just keeps going like that. So aparaspara sambhutam. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, Krishna's giving the his representation of what is demonic thinking. And then he says, as a result of that, as a consequence of a certain philosophy, then what happens? Etam drishtim avashtavya, having such a vision, drishtim, nashta atmana alpa buddhaya, these people whose buddhi is alpa, is very small, nashta atmana, destroying themselves, prabhavanti, they flourish with what? Ugra karmana, activity which is ugra, which is nasty, horrible, destructive, chayaya. For what purpose do they act? Chaya, for destroying. What are they destroying? Jagat, the universe. Ahitaha, there's nothing, there's no hita, there's no benefit. That's the consequence, Krishna's implying. There's a link between how we think and how we act. So he says this demoniac nature, essentially, you know, going from the position God is dead, okay, and then we are lost in a world of meaninglessness. We have to make our own meaning. What meaning shall we make? Kamam ashritya. Kama. What is the meaning? The meaning is to pursue whatever one desires, whatever one thinks is valuable. Kamam ashritya dushpura. Pura. Om Purnam Adaha Purnamida Purna Purnamudachate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Avashishate. It's describing completeness, Purnam. So Pura is related, and Dushpura is the opposite. So not filling, not fulfilling, not satisfying. So kamam is dushpuram. It's difficult or impossible to be satisfied. I was thinking about this this morning. Imagine, now we're imagining, okay? You wake up tomorrow morning, and standing at your bed are some very finely dressed people, some gentlemen with suits and ties maybe, and perhaps some ladies, all very well dressed. You wake up and they're all there, smiling at you, and you're looking, what's this about? And they say, Madam, sir, we have very nice news for you. You may be surprised, but this is just, we're telling you how it is, that as of today, you are now the king of Slovenia, or the queen of Slovenia. And you say, wait a minute. Let me try this again. Let me wake up. And then they say, no, it's really a fact. we gave up, we've abolished the democracy, and we had a meeting, and we decided that actually you are the one who is most qualified to be our leader. And so we want to invite you to your palace. What's the name of the castle up here on the hill? Lubyansky? Grad. Gras. Graz. Grad. Lubyansky? Grad. Okay, so please come up now. You know, you can settle in. We've completely renovated it. It's perfectly comfortable. Don't worry. No cold rooms, anything. So now you're in charge. And after you think about it for a while and after some time, and, you know, it seems real. It's going on. It's people are coming to you. They're asking for direction, advice. They've given you ministers to help you to run the country. And after a few weeks or a few months, you get into it. Imagine. I know it may be hard, but just imagine. But now let's say you've had this position now for a year. And one day you're looking at the map of Slovenia and you're thinking, such a small country. Actually, Istria really is part of Slovenia. I know some of you are saying, yeah. Whatever. Yeah, so you start, you know, you feel it is your duty. It is your God-given duty, actually, to expand the borders of the country. So the point is that Kamam is dushpuram. It is never fulfilled. It is never satisfied. And why is it not satisfied? Of course, it's because it's not possible to satisfy. And why is it not possible? It's not possible because kamam is misdirected prema. It is the opposite of, and yet it has a certain kind of, it has features which are inverted reflections of love. So Krishna is identifying this nature of being absorbed in desire, kamam ashritya, with the demonic quality. But when we read this chapter, we tend to make a big mistake. And the big mistake is we think, yes, now I can sort of lean back and together with Krishna, I can laugh and sneer at the demons. Sneer, you know this word? No. To sneer. Yeah, you're patting yourself on the back and these people looking down on others. Posmehovati. Yeah. kamam ashritya duspuram. Never satisfied, but taken shelter of ashritya, then to cover up for the fact that one is not satisfied, dhamma, mana, mada, anvita. One is endowed, anvita, with dhamma, with pride, with false prestige, and with mada, with conceit, with thinking oneself something one is not. So all of these turns of the mind are a result of the focus on, really it's about greed, it's about trying to get something which one doesn't have. And where does that come from? It comes from a sense of being incomplete. Right? We come into this world crying, screaming, from birth. Icha dvesha samutena, dvandva mohena bharata. We're overwhelmed by icha, desire, and dvesha, disgust. Dvandva moha, we are bewildered by this duality. And this is all a sense of incompleteness. I'm not complete. I need something more. Something is missing. So, already at the end of chapter 2, Krishna is speaking about, he's speaking about completeness, but in an interesting way. Apuryamanam. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram apa pravishanti yatvat. What is it? Verse 70, I guess. Tatvat kama yang pravishanti sarve. Sa shantim apnoti nakama kami. And he's giving an analogy. I'm sure all of you have heard it and read it, but it's nice to remember, to be reminded of it. There's an ocean, and what's happening with the ocean? Rivers are flowing, into that ocean. Is the ocean disturbed by the flowing of rivers into the ocean? Not. And the analogy is to say, don't identify with the rivers, identify with the ocean. The rivers are, in this case, so many different desires that are coming like rivers. They're constant, they're coming constantly, so many desires. But we can pull back our identification with them. We can take a step back. We can notice the desire, and then we can say, wait, wait. Is that something I really need? And the questioning is the awakening of the intelligence. Do I need that? Well, maybe I don't need it, but I really want it. So yoga is about practicing to step back from our desires. But that doesn't sound very exciting. That sounds, sort of boring at best. Oh, we have to restrain ourselves. Yes, okay. So we don't get a lot of customers for that. We don't get many customers. What we are interested in is something positive, and that is the practice of devotion, which is compared to an experience of being fulfilled. bhakti parejanu bhavo viraptir anyatra chaisha trika ekka kalaha prapadyamanasya yatashnata syus tushti pushti kshut apaya anugasam. With every bite, anugasam, there's tushti, satisfaction, pushti, nourishment, and kshut apaya, the reduction of hunger. When you're hungry and you have a meal, prasadam, it's very nice. Bite after bite, anugasam, you feel nourished, isn't it? And you feel relieved of your hunger, and you feel satisfaction. So bhakti, paresha anubhava virakti. There's bhakti, there's paresha anubhava, which means, anubhava means experience, and para-isha, the Supreme Lord, experience of the Lord. So there's bhakti, there's the feeling of bhakti, of devotion, paresha anubhava, there's experience of the Lord, and virakti, there's a feeling of detachment. I've eaten enough. I've had enough. At some point, you push yourself away from the table, or you stand up if you're taking prasadam, sitting on the floor. Now as we get older, more of us, we don't sit on the floor so much when we eat. We sit at tables. But you push yourself away. Okay, I've had enough. So that's the opportunity. That's what bhakti, that's what devotion is about. It's about real nourishment. Now, I just realized, it says here, zvecher, how do you say 19? 19 o'clock? Right. To 1945. Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. Doesn't count today? Okay. Okay. All right, basically we've talked mainly about the first line of this verse, kamam ashritya dushpuram, a bit of the second verse, mohat krihitva satgrahan pravartante asuchivrataha. Asuchivrataha, they are sworn, and Prabhupada's translation is very nice, sworn to unclean work. And Prabhupada in his purport itemizes, he gives us a list, what means unclean work for sinful activities, right? Intoxication, meat eating, gambling, illicit sex, that's the four kinds of unclean work, unclean vows. So to make, the demons also make vows. Devotees make vow. We make vows when we take initiation. We make a vow to not do unclean things, to do clean things. We make a vow to have only good, we say in English, good, clean fun. Do you have any expression like that in Slovenian? Good, clean fun? No. There's no good, clean fun in Slovenian. Well, therefore, we have to teach Slovenian what is good, clean fun, right? So what is good clean fun for devotees? Harina chai. What's that mean? Use your head.
Use your mind.
Yeah. Don't go crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, okay. Well, that's kind of the same idea, I guess. Have fun, but do it with your head. We say have fun and do it with your heart. Confirmed. Okay, I think that's the confirmation to stop here. maybe someone wants to share some reflection, or if you have a question, we can also try to discuss. Yes, Sundar Gopal.
How can we understand Krishna is here explaining these qualities of demoniac people, persons, but we can see that also demigods have these tendencies for lust and for getting things, for opulence, for everything. So, how to put it in perspective?
Okay. Maybe I don't have to repeat the question because you have a microphone. Yes? Right. Yeah. Well, yes. The material world in general is a place where we tend to act in ways, all beings, conditioned souls, are acting in ways which are asuchi vritta, or which are in some respect ahita, not beneficial. That is a characteristic of being conditioned. And you may say, well, but the demigods, they're supposed to be in the mode of goodness. Yes. And the mode of goodness is a mode, a guna. And the gunas, we understand, are always mixed until they become completely purified. And then that's a different story. That's the spiritual realm at that point. So there can be and there will be some mixture. And therefore, even someone may be doing their duty ever so perfectly, it will still have some fault. And Krishna says that in the 18th chapter. What is it? Sahaja karma kaunteya sadosham api natyajet. Sadosha, there's going to be dosha, there's going to be fault, even for someone so to say, in sattva guna, therefore even the devas. That may be one way of explaining. And usually when we read about the demigods engaged in passionate activities, lusty activities, or whatever, they are in the process of learning some lesson. So they've been elevated, yes. Have they become perfected? No. But they're getting some opportunity for learning a lesson. That's what we see in famously in the 10th canto, when Lord Brahma and Lord Indra, we could say, slip up and make trouble. Indra seems to get into a lot of trouble, not just in the 10th canto, but elsewhere. Indra becomes a bit of a comical character in the Bhagavatam. But they're learning, Indra is learning lessons. Daksha is learning a lesson. Daksha is a great, powerful Prajapati, but he gets carried away, and then literally he loses his head. Do you have that expression in Slovenian when someone does something really? You say, oh, I lost my head, sorry. Yeah? So Daksha really lost his head. He lost his head, and then he gets the head of a... What does he get a head of? A goat? A goat's head. Yeah, which is ironic because it's typically a goat which is sacrificed in Vedic animal sacrifices. Typically it will be a goat. So then, in this case, he wanted to make this sacrifice, got upset because Lord Shiva didn't show the respect that he thought he should get, and then it becomes a battle of words and curses, and then he ends up losing his head, and he gets the head of a goat. it becomes a reversal of positions. Although, actually, that's another subject. But in the ritual, sacrificial rites, the ideal. The ideal victim of the sacrifice is the sponsor, the yajamana, the person who says, "Let's do a sacrifice because I want to please the gods so that I can gain wealth and cows and children and long life." And to do this, we'll do this very elaborate sacrifice, which prescribes the sacrifice of certain animals. And there's great detail about which animals and all different aspects. But the animal is a substitute for the yajamana, for the sacrificer who is sponsoring. He's substituting the animal for himself, and then hoping to please the demigods so that he can get their benefits and live this life, with all material comforts. Daksha had this idea, and what happens? He can't control his anger, and as a result, he loses his head. And then he takes the head of the goat, which is being sacrificed. Well, the end of the story is he learns his lesson. He's very humble. He submits himself, and he accepts his, he recognizes his mistake. So, to your question, how is it, why is it that the demigods, yes, even the demigods can become overwhelmed in these ways, because from the perspective of the gunas, we can say, there's never quite pure sattva guna. There's always going to be a mixture. And there is, they can be subject to this as anyone in the material world can. And one could say that they can be even more vulnerable to material desires, because they're in a position of such great enjoyment. Indra has such fantastic enjoyment, and that simply feeds the fire of more desire. Does that make sense? Next time you see a demigod, tell them, be careful. You think you're a demigod. Hare Krishna. Anyone seen any demigods lately? No? Huh? Yes? Maybe there are some demigods amongst us here right now. What do they say? All the demigods assemble to worship the Lord? Mm-hmm. We don't see them. Srila Prabhupada would say, what? You didn't see? Narada Muni was here? The demigods were here. When Prabhupada says something like that, what? You didn't see? It's like, oh my God. We're so blind. Prabhupada was speaking as if it's completely natural to, you know, it's ordinary to see these demigods. What? You didn't see? Huh? Yeah. Anything else? Oh, hey, Mangi, Gopi.
Welcome, Maharaj. Thank you so much for the class. I'm just wondering, you also mentioned a tool how to transform desire, like by controlling mind, and we have different instructions. Mm-hmm. So I just want to ask about these tools. So do you have some other advice for how to control this desire? And how helpful could be revealing mind confidentially, like to share with somebody if something appeared like that need to be prevent, like.
So techniques for dealing with desire.
Yes, in a sense, yes. Sometimes we can stop something, and sometimes we can transform it, and then...
Transform, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I've talked about this sometime before from Patanjali Yoga Sutras. Nice little formula. Vitarka varane pratipaksha bhavanam. It's all... in these four words. vitarka, badane, pratipaksha, bhavanam. So vitarka means some not good thinking. And badane means in the situation of being bound. So in the situation of being bound by thoughts which are not good, what to do? Pratipaksha bhavanam. Think the opposite. Think the opposite. When you notice yourself thinking something and you kind of have enough intelligence from all that we've been hearing for all these years from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra to be able to say, oh, that's not a good thing to be thinking. And then, what to do? You can think, well, what would be the opposite of this? What would be the opposite? And that can be an interesting exercise in itself, to be working out what would be the opposite of this thought that I have. The example that's given immediately after this in the Yoga Sutras is one has some thought of himsa, of violence. And then it elaborates. This can be a simple, can be very, let's see, there's many different categories. It can be himsa, can be violence which I would do myself, or which I would have someone else do, or which I would allow someone on my behalf to do. It could be light violence or medium violence or strong violence. And then it gives some further analysis. And then it says, after analyzing all what exactly is this violence that I'm thinking, recognizing that whatever it is, it's simply going to be the cause of my own suffering. Having gone through that whole kind of mental exercise, how this, what I think is going to be nice, is actually going to end in suffering, then you can start to think, well, what would be the opposite of what I'm thinking? And that can be an interesting exercise. If it's greed, you know, I want something for me, well, how about instead of something for me, how about giving? What about giving? What about what can I give? Who can I give to? What can I give to who? So like that. And that's Patanjali's advice. But you had a second aspect to the question, I forget.
Yeah, this is also, I see as a transformational, actually, you just said, like, just to transform it into opposite. That's really a wonderful idea. Thank you for that. What else? Yes, I'm just, like, any tips, practical tips to do this transformation, but this is also wonderful, just with the shift. Thank you so much.
But the general, you know, this was Prabhupada's response to my one question, how to overcome desire. He said, no desire. And then he said, desire only for Krishna. And then he quoted, anya vilashita shunyam jnana karma dhyanavritam anukulyena krishnana shilanam bhakti uttama. Uttama bhakti is without desire for anything other than pleasing the Lord. So that's bhakti. That's what we're here for. That's our program. So we want, yeah, and then the technique again. What would be, okay, I'm identifying with some kind of, let's say, river, so many rivers flowing into the ocean. And we have that expression in English, maybe you have also, a stream of thought. Same thing. So how, instead of this stream of thought that I'm having now, what would be the ocean that I could identify with? What is that ocean? Into which all desires are flowing. What is that ocean? Yeah, it's not really what, it's who, right? To identify with Krishna, who is completely self-satisfied, Atma Rama. And then when we become like, when we really identify that way, Krishna says, yas tvatma ratirevasyat atma triptascha manava atman yevatmana tushta tasya karyam navidyate. There's no duty, there's nothing you have to, we have to do so many things. And that's what much of the Gita is about. Krishna's telling Arjuna, you have to fight, it's your duty. But then he says, yes to Atma Rati. In the case that you have Atma Rati, in the case that you have attraction to the self, and here Atma can mean the individual self or the Supreme Self, Atmaratir, yas tvatmaratir evas yad atma tripta chamanava. And if you're if a person is satisfied with the self, he uses different words for satisfaction, but basically being self-satisfied, then there's no duty. There's nothing you have to do. You're free at that point. No more need to do any sacrifice. But then, what does the devotee do? A devotee works very hard for Krishna. Because devotee is then free from kama, free to act, free to give full energy for service. And that's a very joyful condition, which is simply giving more and more energy. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. On that note, shall we stop there? Bhagavad Gita ki jai.